Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After today's presentation, we will hold a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star then one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Mark Benmalek. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Don. Good day, everybody. Welcome to today's session on versatile authentication and transaction validation for Tivoli Access Manager. The presentation today is about a solution we developed as a business partner over a period of more than 11 years that we have been working with IBM and which has proven to be a very valuable addition to TAM itself. TrustBuilder itself is what we call a security services platform providing versatile authentication and transaction signing and validation. But let me start by introducing ourselves for those of you who are not familiar with Secure-IT. If you turn to page 2, the company has been created in 1999 and is up till today still privately held and has been focusing entirely on the identity and access management space as a premier business partner from IBM. We work in this area only and exclusively with IBM as a partner. And we have implemented by now over 50 successful projects at large enterprises in many areas. In addition, we have developed a number of products of our own which complement the IBM offering and in many cases have been decisive in making customers decide for the IBM solution. These products are called TrustBuilder, DMAN, and Role Manager, but today's presentation will only handle the TrustBuilder solution. If you turn to page 3, you see there an overview of some of the projects that we have implemented, and in almost all of these cases, TrustBuilder was part and parcel of the solution that has been implemented at the customer side, in addition, of course, to the IBM IAM platform, in most cases, Tivoli Access Manager, but also accompanied in a number of projects by Tivoli Identity Manager, Tivoli Directory Integrator, and Tivoli Federated Identity Manager. If you turn to page 4, this is the start of the presentation around the solution. And we'll first have a look at the issues that we're trying to address with a solution like TrustBuilder, which is the challenges we are meeting in a security infrastructure. On page 5, you'll see a graphical representation of the type of challenge that we have seen over and over again coming up in many projects. Users are accessing applications either directly or through a access management platform like Tivoli Access Manager or that could be the case through a VPN or a network access management system for that matter. These applications, as I generically call them here, need information in order to assure the security of transactions. On the one hand, to fulfill the authentication provide the access control which is required in the due case. Sometimes some validation is required. Reporting is an important aspect nowadays because of the increased regulations that people have to confront in order to be compliant. And in order to accomplish that, these systems need to access back-end resources, whether that be databases, directories, web services, or application service. And that is the case for Tivoli Access Manager as well. In order to fulfill its task as a single sign-on access management platform. On page six, we see some of the challenge that we encounter in doing so. The point is that these requirements are coming up for many different applications. So one has to repeat it for each platform or each application. One has to integrate with often very different APIs. There is a, for instance, in the authentication space, there is a plethora of vendors in the market which each have their own solutions, which have their own way of interfacing with their servers, which have their own way of structuring the data in the repositories that they are using to maintain the link between whatever authentication method is presented and the users. The big challenge is to integrate with all these different systems and methods in a secure way and be sure to set up decent auditing and logging information. It's very often integration at a pretty low level where you're dealing with complex APIs which requires expert knowledge, and moreover, once somebody has built such a system, it has of course to be maintained over time. And everybody knows this is a rapidly changing world in authentication. What's true today, it probably won't be true anymore tomorrow, and certainly not the day after. So people better be prepared to deal with the many changes that over time will have to be accommodated. It can be error prone because implementing these type of very, very technical applications is potentially error prone. And what has to do with all the security issues that are associated with that. And regular developers, application developers, normal application developers, aren't really geared up to deal with this type of challenges. And as I said, the data that is required and the information required about the user and user attributes is often stored in different databases or libraries or directories with different schemas, and we'll have to deal with all the different structure and schema conflicts that may come out of that. So that's the challenge that we are looking at. And if we turn to page seven, you see the way a solution can be offered to these challenges. It consists of putting a security services platform in between the systems, applications, and platforms that require the services and all the resources that are required to fulfill the requirements in terms of solutions, methods and specific interaction that is to be put in place in order to access them. So the purpose of the solution is to provide, in fact, a layer of abstraction between all these specifics and all the details and APIs and data structures and the systems that require the services. Yeah. And providing, in fact, a high-level and much more functional interface to either a web access management platform like Tivoli Access Manager or level access platform. So these are, in fact, the users of the services, and what we're doing is, with this type of approach, is creating a much more higher level interface, making it much more easier for the system to deal with these specific requirements, and making it easier to migrate and change things over time without affecting all these systems and platforms. So we turn to page 8. We see clearly what the advantages are of this approach. By now, we have constructed a reusable service based on a modular backend which allow people to choose and combine different vendor systems and methods at any point in time. We have, at the same time, by doing so, we create for ourselves a central platform where we will keep track of everything what happens around, for instance, authentication, and we can have a centralized place for auditing and logging information. It provides a higher level of abstraction by hiding the complexity of the different APIs by offering a between brackets standard interface, because there isn't really a real industry standard, but one can at least standardize at the enterprise level of how to deal with that and work with a interface which is in a high, more functional level. It also allows to change the methods and systems used without impacting the access management platform or applications. And it is a single component to maintain, which has a very positive impact on the total cost of ownership, because there's only one place where things need to be changed when the enterprise has to adapt to changing requirements. And last but not least, it is offering an interface which is structure and schema independent. So it's a kind of the application or the access management platform has a virtual view on the information, and it's a kind of transparent where the actual data is residing, and in what structure this data is being stored, in what database or in which directory schema. It also allows to combine resources from different places. A good example is, for instance, directory hunting, which becomes possible. So it's really also possible in that way to apply an application-independent policy on how somebody wants to deal with, for instance, an authentication cycle, and change it without impacting the requesting platform or application itself. If we turn to page 9, so far we have set the scene. We have discussed what the challenges that we want to address and what way the concept that could be used to address this challenge. We have done this as QIT by building a Trust Builder. This is exactly what Trust Builder has been developed for. We started Trust Builder already a long time ago. The first incarnation of the product dates from 2003, where it was released under the name Seaman. And I'll come back later in the presentation what the difference is between the Seaman from those days and Trust Builder that we have today. But it is a proven technology which has been used in very large customer projects in very stringent environments. So it is not just offering a particular functionality, but it is a robust platform which is able to fulfill its task in the most demanding environments. It has been optimized and extended over time to the platform that it has become today, and which I will highlight in this presentation. So if you turn to page 10, you will see overview of a graphical overview of the Trust Builder Security Services platform. If you look at the top of the graph, you'll see there the services in dark blue, the services that are being offered by a trust builder. So it's either today in the field of authentication or in transaction validations. And we will go somewhat deeper into these different aspects further in the presentation. The product is offering these services to high-level interface to either an infrastructure component like Tivoli Access Manager or to a traditional application, for instance, through a web service or to a plain HTTP, HTML interface, or via web service to a software-oriented architecture where TrustBuilder will then provide these services to other components in the SOA architecture that require the services. On the other side of the spectrum, on the downside, the green parts, here we find a plug-in architecture. And we have developed by now some 20 connectors, as we call them, which are plug-in modules into TrustBuilder, which will perform various functions, either in the aspects to cover aspects around validation, either internally or interfacing with external validation servers or engines, the capabilities to access information in almost whatever repository that can reside in the organization, or extend the platform to include services offered by any external applications that would fulfill certain parts of the requirements. And in between, you'll find the heart of the system, which is the policy and workflow management component. This management component is able to handle a request in multiple steps, and it's actually the workflow, the way the workflow has been defined, that will determine how the request will be handled in a particular use case. And such a workflow could be context dependent, so the outcome of a particular step in the workflow can influence the way the continuation of the workflow will be handled. And the whole transaction can be managed by a policy where the organization can set the boundaries of what is, for instance, what is acceptable for them as security levels and the like. Today, this this policy and workflow management is still configured in a manual way. But as from the next release of TrustBuilder, which is due for Q1 2011, we'll have a graphical user interface, and that will tremendously make it much more easy for customers to configure the system and change the behavior of the system at any point in time themselves. Whereas the solution originally was developed, when I go back to the Seaman time, as a C-based shared library running on WebSeal, actually, and connecting with WebSeal through the CDAS API, or the C-level API, as it is called nowadays, the latest version of TrustBuilder server is now available as a WebSphere application. So it runs on a IBM WebSphere platform or cluster, for that matter, but it can also be supplied as a software appliance, in which case the customer only needs to provide a Intel-compatible hardware box, and we will supply everything as a software appliance, including the OS and a ASL license we are obtaining from IBM on the WebSphere component. ASL is the IBM term for OEM, as you may know. So this is in at a high level how the solution looks like, and we will dig a little bit deeper now in some of the components that are illustrated on this graph. If you turn to page 11, we'll drill down to the upper part of the graph, which is the services that are being offered by the platform. And as you can see today, we offer two types of services. One is for authentication purposes, and another is for transaction validation. The authentication part has been around actually from the beginning. We put the product on the market. The transaction validation part is much more recent. It was developed in the past year and a half, and it has by now been implemented in a real customer project, which we will illustrate somewhat further in the presentation now. Coming back to the authentication, it provides a reusable and high-level service to the resources that need it. We can configure it to select multiple mechanisms, and this is being done by a workflow. So the system can be configured to, depending on the use case, use different methods to validate, for instance, a CKIT, which can be a passport or a one-time password, or it could be a digital certificate. And all these methods can be used in parallel. It's the workflow that will determine how and when some of these methods will be invoked. What is particularly interesting in a TAM environment is that it is by using this type of multiple stack workflow, it is possible to link a particular mechanism also to users or user groups instead of only to protected objects like TAM is doing. That is a tremendous added value, for instance, in a migration phase, where you can now much more easily migrate users from using one particular system to another one over a period of time, and do it even one by one if in an automated way if that is required. The services will also ensure user mapping, so ID mapping. Can be based on a rule, can be based on a lookup in a in any repository or an LDAP or the TAM LDAP directory, for instance, to determine how, in what way, the token that is obtained through the authentication has to be mapped to a user which is known by the TAM environment or by the protected application, for that matter. In addition, the system can be configured to provide what is called adaptive access control. That means being able to change the entitlements of the user on a session basis. As you know, TAM will take care of the coarse grained static part of the access control. But TAM can work with dynamic groups also. And what we will do here is steer TAM, in fact, using for instance, these dynamic groups. One example is, for instance, is handling the user capacity for a particular session. A good example is in the banking sector. If I'm a bank clerk, I probably will also be a customer from the bank. And I may log into the same system as either a bank clerk or as a customer, and depending on my capacity, the system will give me different entitlements. I will have different roles in the environment for the duration of that session. So this is what we call session entitlements. That can be particular role, that can be particular attributes which are being set, and which, for instance, TAM can then use to forward this information to backend applications, for instance, in the form of tag values in the HTTP headers. It can also be context aware. And here, a good example is the certificate status. The revocation status, for instance, can be verified in different ways. It can be done online, offline, somewhere in between. And really, in some occasions, one has to know what the context is in order to determine what is acceptable as a revocation status setting. This all is being made possible with this configurable workflow that allows us to use all these mechanisms to invoke particular validation mechanisms, to look for information in repositories of different kinds. Gartner has some time ago created a term for such a server in the context of authentication, and they call it a versatile authentication server. We have been doing this for with TrustBuilder for many years now, and we are able to support almost any authentication mechanism today out of the box by pure configuring the system, being able to deal with almost any type of authentication method. As I mentioned before, more recently we have added transaction validation capabilities in the system. And here we're not talking about authentication, but the purpose here is to ensure the transaction integrity, or more in particular, the transaction data integrity, and provide non-repudiation services. So a way to keep a proof that a user has executed this transaction at a particular point in time. Again, the obvious example here is a money wiring transaction, where the actual data, sensitive data, concerns the transaction data, like the amount that is being transferred, like the destination, a bank account number, and the user's ID, and this type of information. But nowadays, we see coming up more and more requirements to keep a kind of a proof point in applications that a user has been able to fulfill certain requirements, has been able to access certain information, or to post certain, or has posted certain information in order to obtain a particular service. And other examples are, for instance, insurance policies or purchasing of goods, for instance, government-like interactions where a person has made a declaration of some kind, like a tax declaration, at a particular point in time, or depositing a legal transaction, legal document, for instance. Once you have put this capability, which used to be built into applications, once an organization has put it in the infrastructure, it becomes quite possible to build in this kind of proof points in different applications without having to change every single application that needs this. That's the whole point about putting this in the infrastructure. So that's the purpose. Now, what needs to be done to accomplish this? Well, there are a number of tasks that need to be fulfilled by the service. It starts by generating some kind of challenge, which is a secured representation of the transaction data. Control the actual signing of the transaction, and then of course validating the signature, and link to that very often. Make sure that the data about the transaction is being kept in a safe place in a kind of a non-reputable store. The beauty of the solution that has been implemented makes it usable as well for applications that are aware of the services. In other words, it's the application itself which calls upon the services, or it can, in conjunction with TAM, it can be implemented also without the application even being aware that the transaction is being signed. And I'll show an example later on in the presentation of this type of implementation. Let's move to page 12. Here we come to the way the security services are being fulfilled. And this is where the plugin architecture comes into place, where we support a number of validation services. This could be internal validation services that is being done, for instance, today for username password. It is going to be done within short for one-time password, either on a software token or mobile for mobile tokens, and for digital certificates. In other circumstances, the system needs to interface with external validation services, and we have been interfacing with different types of systems. For instance, for token validation, like for instance the RSA authentication manager, which is the platform that validates the secure ID token. Or another example is the interface with a certificate authority to verify the revocation status of a certificate. But also, the system is able to interface with external service or services and applications that provide additional functionality like geolocation data lookup, or fraud detection service capabilities. And all this can be included in the workflow so that the validation itself is not just looking at validating the mechanisms, the authentication mechanism, but also can take other factors into account and that can determine whether a user will be allowed to access and have the privileges that are associated with that particular transaction. It is also being used in terms of the transaction validation for the challenge generation that in most cases will use some form of a hashing method to create an object that is composed from the data that needs to be protected, and in some cases even a method of signing, like an applet in the case of digital certificates, for instance. And then the signature validation, again, is something that can be handled internally in the system or by an external server. Depends all on the method that is being chosen to do the actual validation. The information access services, as I explained before, will provide us access to different types of directories, Active Directory being one of them, for instance, but also databases through ODBC or GDBC type of accesses. And finally, there are some application access services that can be integrated. These could be HTTP-based, for instance, and give access to externally provided services, could be used for authentications, could be used for access control to provide dynamic and more adaptive access control, or look up policy rules, for instance, interfacing with a platform like Tivoli Security Policy Manager. And finally, of course, there is a reporting capability that will provide both auditing and logging capabilities, and have the possibility to store transaction data in a non-reputable store. So far for the overlook of the product in a general way, let's dig in a little more deeper now on how it is being used together with Tivoli Access Manager and what the product family looks like. We move on to page 14, where we see an illustration of the first incarnation of the product, which still exists today, by the way. So it's Trust Builder CMAN, as mentioned before, is a today still C-based shared library that runs on TAM Web Seal, and is mainly being used to fulfill more simple requirements in terms of limited additional load to the Web Seal platform. For instance, simply supporting a particular one-time password, which is validated on an external backend server, as an example. In these cases, also a CMAN is used when no user interaction is being required. So the platform is able to talk to different systems like TAM LBAP, like the TAM policy server to the TAM API, and it can talk to a backend authentication server, for instance, with an HTTP connection, and that authentication server could very well be Trust Builder itself, the Trust Builder server version. That allows us, by the way, to integrate Trust Builder server also to the CDES interface and not just to the EAI interface. It is fully compliant with the C API, so the former CDES. It runs on the same platforms as WebSeal is supported, and it supports all the TAM authentication mechanisms and features. Turning to page 15, we see the server version of Trust Builder, which was brought on the market for the first time in 2005, and which is integrated into the external authentication interface of TAM, the EAI, for authentication purposes, but also to the attribute retrieval service of TAM, where it will be, which will be used in transaction validation mode. So it is, as you want, Trust Builder server is an out-of-the-box EAI server, which can easily be configured to fulfill the most complex requirements in terms of authentication, for instance. It can itself be involved in the user interaction, and on this platform, we also support the transaction validation, the more newly announced transaction validation features. In addition to being connectable to TAM itself, the platform can directly be called by applications or other platforms through a regular HTTP, HTML, XML, or SOAP interfaces. In terms of authentication, and we turn to page 16 now, Trust Builder provides for TAM a number of authentications out of the box. It's, of course, username, password, where we can either use the native TAM way of validating, the same as is being used by WebSeal itself, or it can be validated against an LDAP or a radio server. We will provide in the next release of Trust Builder, which is scheduled for Q1 2011, we will also provide out-of-the-box software token and mobile token capability. So it will come out of the box with Trust Builder. And finally, everything that is required to deal with digital certificates is also provided out of the box by the solution. So it, as well, the certificate validation as the revocation checking by any of the methods locally stored or online access or a combination of these methods. And we also have implemented a certificate revocation check policy. So depending on the user type or the security level that is required or the transaction type, we can determine what level of revocation checking is acceptable for the transaction. And we can support multiple methods simultaneously. As mentioned before, this is managed by the workflow capability of Trust Builder. And as from the next release, we will have a simplified GUI configuration interface, which will make it tremendously more easily to configure the system. Turning to page 17, you'll see here a overview of other use cases. This is by no means an exhaustive list. We're just trying to put together a number of use cases that we support today with the solution. In authentication, for instance, any other repository really can use to can be used to do username password validation beyond the TAM or the LDAP or a radio server. In terms of OTP, OTP, we support natively as well Vasco, Gemalto, Secure ID, or any radius-based one-time password system. We can, and we have done some implementations to support biometrics. They all use actually the same methods of doing it with creating a secure token, which Trust Builder can consume and can maintain for the duration of the session. And as I mentioned, X509 certificates. We can the system can deal with multiple user repositories. Example use cases can be directory chaining, for instance, or also called directory hunting. It can be used for account linking and registration. We sometimes calls this also on-the-fly registration of users, so that at the time of their first logon, the account is really created in TAM, for instance, and will be there for subsequent logons. It it can be used also for looking up the attributes from a user profile in any repository that is being used in the organization. It can also provide extended identification capabilities, like I already explained, the identity mapping in order to convert a token or, for instance, a distinguished name from a certificate to a known ID by TAM or the application. And it can add attributes to the credential from coming from any type of environment or repository to enrich the identity, and it also is able to provide session-based and context-based role selection or dynamic group allocation, and forward this group allocation to TAM, so that TAM can, from that point in time, work with these groups for the duration of that session. It is also able to provide strong SSO in terms of it can act as a SAML service provider, not an identity provider. So by no means this is a substitute for TFIM. It is a complement rather. So it just the only thing we aim to do is being able to, in fact, map the ID. It map a SAML token to a ID which is known in the environment. It can generate long-term tokens like cookies, for instance. We can support with this multiple clients in one session. Very good example is the combination of SharePoint service protected behind TAM and Microsoft Office applications on the workstations, which normally would require two sessions. One to access the SharePoint server, and another one to open the document from within the application. We have with Trust been able to combine these two and provide single sign-on through TAM for both, so without any interruption, without any need to additional logon for the user. And we can create multi-tier tokens and validate them to create a strong relationship between multiple tiers in an architecture. And as I mentioned before, transaction validation is something that is being added in the past year and a half. We can do it by using one-time password systems like the one from Vasco, Gemalto, or Secure ID. The implementation with it is compliant with the Visa MasterCard standard called CAP EMV, And it can also be handled by X509 signatures. And finally, I would like to show a little bit more about the transaction signing and validation. And we turn to page 18 now. And I'm going to use the use case that we did with ING Bank in the past year, and which is now being put into production for a user community of roughly 1.5 million, million users. On page 19, you'll see the business objectives of the customer. In the first place, there were they wanted to introduce a new authentication method to replace the old mechanism, which had been there for over a decade, and they actually wanted to move to a non-connected card reader in combination with the bank card, and it based on the CAP EMV standard. Of course, migration is an important aspect here. You can't change 1.5 million users overnight from one system to the other. So we need to provide a way for users to gradually migrate from one system to the other. And the second objective is by doing so by creating a new, what is called Channel Security Infrastructure, NCS, which is of objective to externalize all the authentication from the applications, carve out the transaction signing and validation functions from the existing applications. This was actually being done by IBM services and reuse these infrastructure-based security service for new applications, which will provide for them a tremendous return on investment. Turning to page 20, if you look at transaction validation, there are a number of phases that need to be handled. We're not handling the authentication in this presentation. Of course, this was implemented as well in this project, but we'll focus in now on the transaction validation. And here are the three phases described to handle a transaction's validation. There is a preparation phase where one has to collect the sensitive information from the transaction and generate a challenge, generally in the form of a hash. The second phase is the signing, actual signing of the transaction. So present a signature form to the user, embed the challenge that had to be signed, and potentially embed also the signing logic if that is required. It was not the case in ING, since I already mentioned it was using a non-connected card reader, and in that case there is no software requirement on the end user's PC. And then finally, there's the transaction validation and capturing the signature, validating the signature, and store the validation result. On page 21, you'll see the infrastructure that is being put in place. And the example here shows a what so-called application-centric use of transaction validation, which actually means that it is the application which maintains control of the user interaction. So it has some impact in that case on the application itself. What it means is that we offload, in fact, all the validation aspects to the Trust Builder server instead of having to build them in the application itself. And the server, Trust Builder server, will provide the challenge preparation and the validation services as a backend service to the application. On page 23, you will see at first sight it's a very complex schema, and I will not go into any detail on this schema. But roughly speaking, what it comes down to is that it's the first part is the transaction between the user and the application itself, and at some point the user has filled in a form, posted it to the application, and here is where Trust Builder comes into the session, where the red text is starting. So in this case, the application will forward the transaction data, the user ID, session ID, to Trust Builder, We'll store it in a transaction store. It will generate the hash and register the transaction. The application then itself will present the signing page with the data from Trust Builder that has been forwarded in the form of fields or a frame or a JSON object, and then present it to the user. And here it is then, in this example, it is not being used yet by ING, but this is one possibility that is illustrating how TAM can play a role. In this case, once the transaction is being signed, a policy in TAM can set that when receiving such a URL, it will have to, via the ARS interface, forward the information to Trust Builder, which will then do the validation of the signing, store the information in a non-reputable store, and then return the validation result to TAM, which then, again, will look at this policy. We said, okay, the signing is being accomplished. Now I can forward the transaction to the application. So this is a way where this is a slightly adapted version where TAM really interferes in the with its policy setting in the handling of the transaction. In the first release of ING, it is still today completely handled between the application and Trust Builder itself. Now we can go a step further. If we move on to slide 24, you will see that for instance, in new applications that are being deployed or in existing applications, we can even have Trust Builder in conjunction with TAM do the complete phases of the validation. So preparation, signing, and validation. And the application may not even be aware that this is being done. On page 25, you will see a new a schema of this type of transaction. The first two lines are really the same, and we come up to a transaction which has to be submitted. And in this case, where you see the number one, it's already a policy set in TAM. We'll say, oh, if somebody submits this type of transaction, I will have to redirect it to Trust Builder, which will then capture that and, again, store the transaction information, generate the challenge, and this time around, it is Trust Builder itself will take over the user interaction through TAM, and it will present the signing page to the user. And once the transaction has been signed, we come back to the same type of process. The transaction at point number two, TAM says, decide that, well, I'm receiving now a transaction that is being signed, but it is not being validated yet. So again, I will forward it to Trust Builder, who will actually do the validation of the signature, return the result to TAM, and then this time around at point three, TAM will see, oh, now everything is being fulfilled in my policy. I can forward the transaction to the application. And it's in this way we can sign transactions and built-in proof points in existing applications even without the application ever knowing it. Now, these are just two examples of use cases. There are many variants that can be configured with the system, and that is indeed what it comes down to: configuration, no development. Everything is being developed upfront. The components exist. It's just a matter of defining the correct workflow and the correct interaction between the components. Moving on to slide number 26, in the interest of time, a short overview of the Trust Builder versions and the roadmap that we have in front of us. On page 27, you'll see the different versions and platforms that are being supported. So in terms of TAM, up to the latest version of TAM is being supported. And in terms of interfaces, we support as well CDAS, which is the C API, the EAI, and the Attribute Retrieval Service. Trust Builder CMAN is, as I mentioned, a shared library running on WebSeal and supporting the platforms where WebSeal is supported. Trust Builder Server is either being delivered as a G2E application for a customer-provided WebSphere environment on one of the OSs that are mentioned here, or indeed as a standalone software appliance on an Intel box. In terms of the roadmap, in the current version of Trust Builder, Trust Builder CMAN is version 2.2, which is still the C-based module, as is the case for Trust Builder Server 3.0, which is still a C-based implementation. As from version 4.0, we changed everything to Java and running now on WebSphere. But version 3 is still in the field, and some customers still have to migrate from 3 to 4. The next version, which is scheduled for Q1 2011, is version 5. Both CMAN and server will be completely Java now. So CMAN will take over the new architecture, which was defined for server 4.0 and being written in Java. And Trust Builder Server will have some important extensions, such as the GUI, which I already mentioned. There will be a scripting engine, a dashboard for monitoring purposes, and we will add out-of-the-box soft and mobile one-time password support. On page 28, 29, and 30, we've added some examples of the graphical user interface, which is upcoming for on release 5 for your review. So as we see in slide 28, it is a browser interface where the user of the admin console can either create a new workflow or import an existing one or open actually a existing workflow. And on page 29, you see a rather simple example of a workflow starting from the green circle, which is the beginning of your transaction. On the blue part, you'll see a condition, where the check is this a password or a one-time password. So as I mentioned, this could be accomplished by either a rule or a lookup in a repository, and depending on the outcome of that, the appropriate validation mechanism will be invoked. So either on the left side you'll see it's a username password validation. On the right side you'll see at this time around a one-time password generation. In the example, a Gemalto server would be used. And then when everything is being handled correctly, the transaction is terminated and the result is being returned to the requesting resource. That could be TAM, for instance. On page 30, you see an example of how more complex such transaction can get with multiple authentication mechanisms, additional lookup of information or attributes, access control information in particular, repositories. And all of this can be configured via drag and drop. So the objects can be reused. And via drag and drop, one can determine the way the workflow is being accomplished. And we have a demo available of this capability. Although the product is not yet, the GUI interface is scheduled for version 5, so it's not yet available for customer use, but it is already out of development and we can demonstrate it. So this on 31, we come to the last page of my presentation. We have looked at Trust Builder that can be used for authentication purposes, where it provides an important number of out-of-the-box capabilities, and most importantly, it provides the flexibility that customers are needing and requiring for this type of platforms. And in addition, it now also provides transaction validation, and the way it can do that in combination with TAM is really unique in the industry. There is no other combination in the industry that can accomplish, for instance, this seamless and transparent transaction validation as we can do with that combination. With that, we are at the end of the presentation. It's exactly 60 minutes. I'm now opening the floor for questions.
And if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. Please state your name slowly and clearly. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. One moment, please. We have no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. Well, I guess then I would like to thank everybody for their interest. And if there are any additional questions coming up, please look at the last slide where you can see the coordinates that you can use to reach us at SecureIT. Thank you for your attention.
The call has ended. Please disconnect.